Welcome back to the Green Zone. My name is Britton Gray, and I am here for Jamie and Walker today. Though Jamie Nye is joining me right now as we discuss the riders and everything. But first of all, Jamie, we've heard your interviews with the people you talked to when you were in Normandy. Just what did it mean to you to be out there?
Well, it was a big family vacation throughout England and France, and it culminated on June the 5th when they were unveiling the Regina Rifles statue in the Normandy region in the small town outside of Cannes, France, where really the Royal Regina Rifles, when they pushed in from Juneau Beach, that's where they kind of were based. And hearing the stories of not only on, you know, D-Day, but in the weeks after fighting off the forces from Germany. So it was a interesting time, of course, with the timing of that. And I'm so grateful that it worked out, because to have my son and daughter, my wife and I, we kind of covered the event but to be there and to be able to speak to William, who's 99 years old. He was the only member of the Royal. There's three remaining that were alive, but he was the only one who was able to be there in France, and to meet him and to shake his hand and to thank him for the service and to see that community. Like, when that event was happening, the Place de Canadien in that community was kind of filling with locals, and the people who had homes neighboring it were opening their windows, and they watched and clapped and, you know, had the Canadian flags driving down the streets in that town, the Canadian flags and the poppies. And it just felt like, okay, wow, that's where it really hits you on how much the Canadian military and the Regina Rifles made an impact. And it is remembered there as it was here today, all across the province at cenotaphs and, of course, Remembrance Day ceremonies in Saskatoon and Regina. So it'll be a day that I will never soon forget, because it meant a lot to actually be there to witness it and to meet one of the men who stormed the beach of Juneau way back. Of course, June the 6th. This was June the 5th. It was June the 6th was the next day, 1944. So we were talking a little bit about kind of like what it would have been like the day before, the night before, before they actually stormed Juneau Beach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you mentioned, grateful to be there and also have your family out there. Now, I was in Winnipeg. It was a sad time in Winnipeg because of the passing of Ted Wyman, who I know you knew very well. I got to know over the past a few years here, but Just a big loss in terms of the CFL community out there.
Yeah, and the Winnipeg community and the football community and the curling community. Ted Wyman was one of the big reporters to cover curling across Canada. Of course, he was based out of Winnipeg, but for Post Media, he was usually the guy they leaned on to cover curling. Part of his early days was at the Moose Jaw Times Herald. I remember being at a golf tournament, and there was an article with Ted Wyman's name on it from back when he covered in Moose Jaw. And he had a heck of a fight with cancer over the last year, couple of months. And it was sad that he lost that fight. But, he was, as you know, Britton, he was a great guy. And I'm very happy, and, you know, shout out to Wade Miller and the Bombers organization for recognizing Ted before kickoff of the West Final.
Mm-hmm. And so now the Riders, they lose that West Final. Well, they don't lose. They get pummeled by the Bombers. Just a couple days later, what went wrong
for everything. The
Riders? Everything.
Everything went wrong. Sorry, that's not everything. Adam Korzak had a great fake punt. That was... And there was a time where the Riders, you start to feel, okay, they're getting, they came, come back, maybe within a possession, and then the Bombers answer right back. But there was a point in the first half where I thought they should have gone for it instead of kicked the field goal, where I thought it was a little bit conservative. And then later in the game, it was aggressive. And talking to Corey Mace yesterday, I asked him directly, like, what are the things you learn as the coach? And he said throughout the season, there are those times he's going to have to really go back and go through it but it's being too aggressive, not being aggressive enough, maybe believing in the analytics a little bit more than your gut. And he says, sometimes as a head coach, I just have to believe in the gut, because he did find himself kind of second-guessing himself sometimes. It's not second nature yet. It's not instinctual for some of these, and they're very hard decisions. So we'll see how Corey Mace grows, and we'll also see if, you know, does he delegate a little bit more of his defensive responsibilities elsewhere?
Yeah, that'll be interesting what they decide to do there. You talked to Trevor Harris yesterday. It was the locker room cleanout. Do you have any idea if he's back or not next season?
I couldn't read the tea leaves on that one yesterday, Britton. I really couldn't. I was trying. I was like, what is he saying? Like, because Trevor Harris was quite honest. You played the tape earlier. It was a guy who said, I will walk away if they don't believe I can get it done. Now, he still believes maybe his best football is still in front of him. Corey Mace said yesterday that he looks at Trevor Harris as a number one quarterback. So you see that and you go, okay, I think they're bringing Trevor Harris back. But they can't just go, okay, let's bring Trevor Harris back. They need to go through it all. And in the background of the CFL, everybody knows everybody, and every agent knows every agent and knows every general manager who knows every player. They will have a pretty good sense of the lay of the land after Grey Cup week, what players are going to shake free, what players might be available, and that will help mold that decision on what they do at quarterback.
It's going to be very interesting. Jamie Nye joining me, who, since I'm not in Vancouver, will be our Grey Cup correspondent out there.
I was really hoping you'd be there with me, Britton.
So was I, you know, just gosh darn it. So close.
But maybe
yet,
next
so
year you'll get to go to Winnipeg for the Grey Cup.
Only stadium I'm ever going to visit. Well, in a capacity of maybe covering this team, is going to be Winnipeg. Been there twice. Maybe I'll be in there the last game of the season next time around. But here we go. Bombers, Argos.
Who cares?
Who cares? Well, let's try and analyze this. There are Bomber fans and maybe some Argo fans who listen. Just, I mean, I think it's a foregone conclusion with Nick Arbuckle starting for Toronto that the Bombers are going to.
But see, I hear this. Oh, Nick Arbuckle's going to start. It's going to be the Bombers doing what they just did to the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. That defense in Toronto, I think they're going to, what was the button? I think Corey Mace was talking about he should have hit the button a couple more times. They're going to hit the button a couple more times. That defensive line, they are a better defensive line for the Riders compared to the Riders in terms of getting to the quarterback, causing disruptions, getting sacks. Whitten McManus is a beast. That Amos, you go through that defense, that is a very talented defense that the Bombers are up against. And I don't know what it is about the Bombers. I think going into their fifth Grey Cup, they can't get amped up to the level of their opponent. They couldn't do it against Toronto. They couldn't do it against Montreal. And this Toronto team, I think, is going to have a lot more juice because the Bombers have been there, done that. And I think that might be a detriment where they're going, it almost feels like a regular week. But that adrenaline rush of coming out of the tunnel going, oh my God, and looking at the lights where the Bombers come out and go, yeah, I've been here, done that before. There's a blessing, and I think it might be also a little bit of a curse for the Bombers.
It's going to be interesting who I guess steps up. Quickly, I guess before you go, I forgot to ask this about the Riders. We're talking about their grade this year. What do you kind of give them when you look at this full year? Successful? Eh? Or is it a failure? Because every year, you never know if you're going to get back to the Grey Cup.
Well, you talk to the players who had Grey Cup aspirations and, no, it's Grey Cup mentality. They're just going to default to failure. But come on. Year one of a rookie head coach, Corey Mace, with a couple of nominees for Most Outstanding Player Awards and Coach of the Year Award. Overall, this organization has started to build it. That was the phrase right out of day one of camp. Build it. They continue to build it. The foundation is laid. That has to be classified as a successful season.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me, Jamie, and enjoy Vancouver.
I will very much try to enjoy Vancouver. Once again, Britton, I was really hoping you'd be along for the ride this year. I thought the Riders were going to do something special, but Winnipeg had other ideas, I guess.
I got to look at the bright side. I get to cover the U of R Rams, who will be hosting the Mitchell Bowl against Laval. Who would have thought?
But it's in Regina, so, hey, you know, pack it up. Let's fill it. Let's make it noisy on Laval, because that's a good Rams defense. It's just whether or not the offense can keep up with the Rouge Or.
Yes, I can't go to Vancouver, but I do get to cover the Rams, who will be going on quite the run and get a chance to go against Laval. And, I mean, hey, I know that they're going to be considered the underdogs, but I think they've been considered the underdogs this entire playoff run they've been on. So anything can happen. As Jamie said, let's get out, support the Rams if you're in Regina. Pack that and make it real hard for Laval. I'm Britton Gray on the Green Zone on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the Green Zone. My name is Britton Gray, in for Jamie and Locker today. And we've been asking people to text in their thoughts today about what grade they would give the Riders and kind of how they're feeling about this team going forward. Text or call at 1-877-332-8255. I have a text here from Terry from Saskatoon. Good day, Britton. Thanks for respecting our veterans while you are on the air. I give the Riders a B this year. Not sure why they bothered to dress Armstead and then not use him. I'm also wondering why they just decided not to do that, but hey. I'm not sure what Davis Alexander's contract situation is, but if we could get Trevor to take a pay cut and then sign Alexander, that would work for me. It would be nice to get Hardrick back and keep Godber healthy all year. We also need a breakaway receiver to complement Emelis, Johnson, Schaefer, Baker. Not sure about safety, as it seems that both the combo and Dahlke struggled at times. Give Coach Mason his staff another year experience. I think we'll be good. That is Terry from Saskatoon. And yes, the receiver, I agree. You need someone who can take the top off a defense. They just didn't have it this year, and you need that to come back from multiple scores down. Davis Alexander is going to be interesting. I know a lot of Rider fans would like for the team to go get him. I'm just not sure that Montreal lets him go. I imagine that a younger quarterback, Cody Fajardo, struggled at times this year. I'm not sure if Montreal even lets him test the market or if they try to get him under contract right away. Well, it was garbage bag day for the Riders yesterday, cleaning out their lockers. And as this team looks to 2025, we don't know who's going to be here. We don't know who's going to stick around. That is some questions have to be asked. One of those questions will be Marcus Sales, who had an all CFL year. Someone the Riders got in after the BC Lions cut him. Not sure what the price tag was, but I imagine he did nothing but increase what he's going to get for his next contract. And Jamie was able to meet up with Marcus Sales yesterday during garbage bag day in the locker cleanout.
Marcus, you joined this team after training camp. How badly do you want to be here to start training camp in 2025?
No, I definitely want to be here. You know, ever since I got here, there's been nothing but love. You know, my teammates, these coaches, they've shown me nothing but respect, love, these fans. And, you know, just looking back on our season and, you know, seeing where we ended, you know, I feel like we'll be here again. And, you know, I just want to be a part of it. I want to be a part of the organization that's, you know, willing to work, willing to, you know, try and get the job done. And, you know, on top of just everything else, all the love and all the respect and, you know, the teammates and what we have here, you know, I want to be a part of that.
Do you have any answers to that question for this offseason yet, or is it still waiting?
I definitely got to say, I got to talk with my family, talk with my fiance. You know, we got things to talk about, but at the end of the day, you know, it's nothing but respect here, nothing but love, and, you know, I hope it's the same thing whenever I do talk to the coaches.
You've been a part of Grey Cup teams. What do you see? What is special about this group?
Man, it's just different. We was just up there, you know, doing our exit meetings with our coaches and whatnot, and just seeing like all the love we have for each other, all the respect, all the, you know, how we just want to grind, how we just want to work, holding each other accountable. You know, even without even us watching film, really, we just know what we can do. We know what we have here, and, you know, hopefully we can just build on top of that. So I hope I can be a part of that.
What do you think? Why is the biggest difference maker that this team just couldn't get there this year?
Honestly, just without really watching film, I just feel like we just didn't play our best ball, you know, all around. You know, statistically, they probably had one of their better games, and, you know, in a playoff game like that, you know, we can't have that. We got to be a little bit more dialed in. We have to be, you know, do a little bit extra, no matter what it is. We gotta be able to pull each other up, you know, on the sideline, in the game, and defense to offense to defense. We gotta figure out a way in. But credit to them, you know, they got a great team, great staff, and, you know, hopefully they do what they gotta do too.
What is this day like as a player? You don't have to come in and break down film. You have to basically say goodbye and go your separate ways.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we're gonna have a party at the end of the day. But you know, it's gonna be a tough situation. You know, there was still some tears shed, and you know, we just gotta look at ourselves. You know, at the end of it, and just see how we can get better. You know, because we have so much to give, so much to prove, and you know, we have so much leadership here and so much just gratitude for each other. And, you know, that's really what it's all about at the end of the day. We know we're blessed to still be able to, you know, play football at a high level. And, you know, comparatively from last year to this year, you know, you can see how much we've grown. So, you know, I just hope we can continue to build on top of that.
Marcus,
the top of the mountain in this league. How close or far away is this organization from attaining that goal?
No, it's really close. I feel like it could have been done this year. You know, we're doing this stuff with a first-year head coach, you know, a coach that came in here and trying to galvanize a lot of guys with, you know, people he didn't really know. You know, he brought in some pieces here and there, but I feel like that's all we didn't need nothing more. We had everything right here, and you know, unfortunately, the cookie just didn't crumble our way. But at the same time, you know, we had a great team. You know, we went through adversity, we went through injuries, we went through, you know, family losses, we went through so much, and you know, nobody ever felt as if like we couldn't get it done. Nobody ever felt as if, you know, we didn't have what it take to, you know, to get to the Grey Cup and ultimately win it. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's nothing but love and respect for this organization, and you know, we're going to continue to grow from here.
Corey said last night, crappy game plan. Is that just a coach taking the bullets for the team?
You know, I can't really say it's the game plan. All I can speak on is our performance, and I just know performancely we didn't do our best job, and you know, that's got to be on us. You know, we got to look at ourselves and just see what we could have done better, and you know, we just got to go from there.
That's Marcus Sales, who, as I mentioned, will be a free agent at the end of this. Whenever free agency begins, Riders can re-sign him, but you have to imagine, like I said, the way he played, I imagine a team will be coming searching for him and willing to offer him a contract. It's up to the Riders to kind of figure out where he fits in, the contract, everything. But he's one of a few names. Trevor Harris, as we've mentioned. Shea Patterson, they would have to sign him to an extension. Frankie Hickson, Rockwell Armstead, Jarris Stearns, just going through here. Ryan Sevier came in as the sixth guy for most of the year, but I thought he played really well when he was out there. Peter Godber. Noah Zare, Brian Cox Jr., Miles Brown, who I thought had a really good year, Malik Carney, the guys on defense, Jameer Thurman, who was the leader of this defense, who was that middle linebacker, great year from him. Defensive backs, such like I said, Marcus Sales, Deontay Williams, Amari Henderson, Nelson Lacombo, Jaden Dahlke, Mario Alford. There's a lot of free agents, a lot of possible changes. We'll see who comes back, but as Marcus Sales said, they're going to enjoy their last day together. Did that yesterday. They go home because they know they're veterans. This is the last time that this group, as it was constructed, will be together, because change is inevitable in any sports league. Win or lose the big championship, change is usually on the way. I'm Britton Gray here on the Green Zone on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the Green Zone. My name is Britton Gray, and I am in for Jamie in Locker today as Jamie gets set to head to Vancouver. He will be enjoying the Grey Cup, but you'll hear me in Locker tomorrow as Jamie kind of does a travel. You'll hear Jamie throughout the week, of course, as he brings in all the audio from Grey Cup and covers the Bombers again and the Toronto Argonauts, who are starting Nick Arbuckle because Chad Kelly has suffered a broken tibia. Broken leg just in the East final there. And so we'll see. All of a sudden, a lot of attention shifts to how that Argos defense is going to do against this Winnipeg Blue Bombers offense. But you have to play the game, and we'll see who walks away with the win. But joining me right now is Green Zone Game Day analyst and Grey Cup champion Belton Johnson. And Belton, we both thought the Riders were going to find a way to knock off the Bombers, but alas, that was not the case.
Yeah, Britton, that was, how can I say it? The Riders let me down on that one. Just based on how high they had come into the postseason, you know, playing amazing football, you know, offensively, defensively. I definitely thought that they had a chance to beat the Bombers. But, you know, I think the Bombers, how can I say it, big brothered them. Like, go sit in the corner there somewhere, little bro.
Yeah, it did. That game really never seemed even in reach for the Riders. When you've had a couple days now to just think back at it, what went wrong ultimately for Saskatchewan in the game?
Oh, man, I think I had talked about it on pregame there about not giving up big plays to the Bombers, and I think the Bombers had a number of big plays. I think about that 31-yard touchdown pass from Kolaris to Lawler. Mm-hmm. And I think there were a few more big plays to Lawler. And when you give up the big plays, it just kind of deflates you. And I just felt like that's what happened when you give up the big one. It's like, oh, man. Like the Riders were never able to recover. And, you know, for a defense that had been getting turnovers, you know, lately and led the league, I don't think they got a whole lot, Britton.
No, and so when I look back at this Rider season, that game kind of showed what was wrong with this team. I think this team was built to win one specific way, and when they got down, I don't think they had the ability to come back. Well, what was your assessment now when you look at the whole of this Rider season and what flaws they actually had?
Well, you know, some of the flaws, I would say we start with the coaching. You know, in that game, I thought Coach Mace was out coached, and, you know, it's just showed some of, you know, some rookie mistakes that I think we saw during the regular season as well, right? You know, sometimes I wonder if he's wearing too many hats being the head coach and the D coordinator from time to time, but I do think that was one. And, you know, again, during the regular season, during that, I guess, that winless skid and everything, right? They just, you know, kept losing those, like, I said they kept them close games and everything, right? But with this one here against the Bombers, it was just like the Bombers, they had time to go back and look at film themselves as well, right? And they were just able to exploit some of that zone coverage. You know, I wonder why the defense never, I guess, mixed it up. I think the one time that the Riders mixed it up was, I think I only saw one blitz. And you know what? Kolaris got the ball out of his hand quick, fast, and it was an incomplete pass. So, you know, that zone coverage, that zone defense, it really hurt them this go-round, too.
It did. And so now for the Riders, it's looking next year, looking to 2025. A decision has to be made about Trevor Harris. He also has to decide what he's going to do in his football future. He will be 39 next year, back-to-back knee injuries. Obviously, he has the young family and everything, wants to spend time with them, but he has to make a decision. If you were the general manager and you saw what you did this year and the playoffs, do you bring Trevor Harris back, or do you think they have to go out and find someone else?
Oh, man, that's a good question, Britton, because, you know, at the end of the regular season, I'm like, yep, got to bring Trevor Harris back. And then at the end of this playoff game here against the Bombers, like, oh, maybe the Riders need a new quarterback that can, you know, scramble and run around a little bit, right? Because, I mean, when they get pressure on them, there's nothing he could do. So, you know, I'm kind of on the fence with Trevor Harris. I kind of think you bring him back, but as in, you know, I don't know if he would be a starter. Maybe you make him fight and earn a job, but I still think the Riders need to bring in another quarterback of youth and everything.
All right, so let's just hypothetically here, they don't bring Trevor Harris back. Which situation would you rather see? Vernon Adams Jr., Davis Alexander, bringing Bo back to the West, or let Shea Patterson and Jack Cohn duel it out?
I think David Alexander, man, he's young. I think he can mold and shape him a bit. And, you know, we saw what he's been able to do with the Alouettes over there this season. The Riders had first-hand experience, if you remember that regular season game. He just seemed like a fresh breath air to me. Vernon Adams, you know, he's been in the league a while. You know what he's done. You know, Bo, the same thing. I think Shea Patterson been in the league here for a little while. Why not bring in a youngster like Davis Alexander.
All right, perfect. And so game day, joining me right now is game day analyst Belton Johnson, Grey Cup champion. Let's switch gears. Let's talk about the NFL a little bit, because there was some great games. Which game really stuck out in your mind as just wow this week?
I'm going to tell you, well, I think it was the Broncos and the Chiefs, man. I mean, the Chiefs, they're, what, 9-0 now? And the Broncos, they had them on the ropes. They had them, Britton. Had them. And the Chiefs, they find a way to win the game. They blocked the field goal. I actually picked the Broncos to win that game, and I'm sitting there dumbfounded. How do you let those guys through like that? So that was a big one there, I thought.
That was a big game. Also, I mean, the Detroit Lions, a team that might face the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, they had to pull off their own big comeback.
Yeah, that was an amazing game last night, the Lions and Texans. The Texans looked like they were on a route. I think they had a pretty sizable lead there at halftime. And Goff, what he had, what, threw five interceptions? No way. Is a team supposed to win a game when you have five turnovers like that? But, yep, Detroit, I don't know. They seem like they could go all the way, man.
Perfect. And finally, let's talk a little bit of the Dallas Cowboys. Are they just an unserious football team?
I'm wondering if they're fighting for that first pick right now, Britton.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were overmatched that game. You know, they don't have the quarterback. You know, the O-line's beat up. You know, I guess the one positive got, you know, Micah back, who had a couple big plays in that game, but the Cowboys, I'm pretty sure the season is done for those guys. I hate to tell you that, Britt, but it's not looking good. Even if they play the Panthers, I think the Panthers could beat them right now, to be honest with you.
I would actually enjoy that, because Jerry Jones deserves all the embarrassment he's getting this year for this team. Well, thanks for joining me, Belton. Really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, Britt, and happy Remembrance Day and happy Veterans Day.
Yes, that was Belton Johnson, who thinks that the Carolina Panthers could beat the Dallas Cowboys at this point, and he might not be wrong with how Dallas has looked just terrible all season long. But speaking of NFL, we got a big NFL game tonight. You have the Los Angeles Rams hosting the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins getting Tua back. They're hoping to get things back on track. Maybe make a run at the end of the year here, maybe make playoffs, but they need some stuff to go their way. And, of course, the Rams, another team that's starting to get healthier with a Cooper Kupp and starting to look good. They're my pick to win that division. I think the 49ers are falling off there. I think that's a tough division, though. Seattle, but my pick is for the L.A. Rams to end up winning that division, because they have a great head coach, a great veteran quarterback, and they're kind of figuring it out as they go along. But just overall, like I mentioned, a great weekend of NFL action as well. Yeah, there was the West Final that I know a lot of Ryder fans didn't enjoy. But on Sunday, you got to sit down, enjoy some great NFL football. Kansas City Chiefs continue to find just weird ways to win. That's what great teams do. They might go undefeated this year, which is crazy when you look at their roster outside of some of the few greats. It doesn't look good on paper, but boy, those greats are just all-timers, and that's why they continue to find ways to win. That defense is so good. I don't know who's knocking them off this year, but it might be the Detroit Lions, who have also found ways to win, weird ways to win. Chance out here producing, I know he's disappointed with how that game went. Of course, a Texans fan and the Detroit Lions pull off the comeback. I think I'd have to double check it, but I think Jared Goff is like something crazy when he throws four interceptions. He's like 7-0 or something whenever he does it. It's a weird stat, one of those weird kind of Jared Goff stats, but finding ways to win, that's what the great teams do. And right now, it's Kansas City, Detroit. I think those have to be the favorites right now in the AFC, NFC to possibly make it all the way to the Super Bowl. Well, coming up next, like we mentioned, it's Remembrance Day. Jamie and I was in Europe in Normandy during the 80th anniversary of D-Day. They unveiled a statue dedicated to the Regina Rifles, and he was able to do some interviews out there, including next with Bev Pahalchuk, whose father was a member of the Regina Rifles. She was out there wearing her father's military jacket. So we'll hear from her next here on The Green Zone. I'm Britton Gray here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to The Green Zone. My name is Britton Gray, and I am in for Jamie and Locker today on Remembrance Day, a very important day across the country as we take a moment to reflect on the sacrifices that have been made in order to keep our country free and give also appreciation for those still serving and those who have served. I know Remembrance Day ceremonies across the country today and Regina, Saskatoon, across the province as well. A lot of people taking time out of their day to do that and give thanks and really reflect on the sacrifices that went into keeping this country free. As I mentioned, Jamie Nye was over in Europe this past spring, summer there, and he was able to be at Normandy when they unveiled the statue in honor of the Regina Rifles for the 80th anniversary of D-Day and commemorating all the sacrifices that they made out there on Juno Beach. And so he also got a chance to interview people. One of those people was Bev Pahalchuk, whose father was a member of the Regina Rifles, and she attended the statue ceremony wearing her father's military jacket.
Your father fought with the Royal Regina Rifles.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Did he land on the beach?
He landed at Juno Beach with D Company.
Yes.
And he survived. Oh, yeah. Yes, he was here.
What's it like to be here to watch this statue?
This is pretty special. This is pretty special to be able to be part of it. Didn't realize the extent to which it was going to be. My husband, our son, which would be his grandfather, and his wife are also here for this event. And tomorrow, look forward to being at Juno Beach for that event.
I've asked a lot of families of veterans, was your dad like them? Didn't say much about what actually
happened. Talked about lots, yeah. But always about camaraderie.
Yeah.
Just the camaraderie, not the horrors. Nobody talked about horrors.
Could you even imagine 80 years ago tomorrow?
I can't. The first time we came here, I said, I have to put my feet in the water at Juno Beach. I put my bare feet there, and I cannot imagine putting my body in there at this time of year.
Well, what's it like knowing your father, his comrades, his crew had such a monumental impact on World War II on D-Day?
I don't think at home they realize it as much as it is a part of the lives here. You know, because here, I think they really still remember with real passion, a real passion and a gratefulness for what went on.
What's taken me aback a little bit is driving around town and seeing all the Canadian flags.
That's right. And the fur, when we came out and you drive around the communities, everybody has red and white flowers. They have flags. They are waving. If you have anything that looks Canadian, you are just most welcome. It's just the love they have for Canadians.
How special is this place, this monument?
This is an incredible monument. And a few years ago in Regina, we did get to see Princess Anne because she was at one of their reunions. So my mom and I were present for one of those. And yeah, that was very special. You can just see how much it's a respect and a gratitude, I think, is the biggest part.
How is it emotional at all for you?
Yes, it is. It is. It's very emotional to think that, you know, our generation are what we are because of what has happened. Yeah.
Do you live in Regina currently?
We live in Saskatoon.
Saskatoon.
Yes,
okay.
Saskatoon. Mm-hmm. You probably might know of my niece, Barb Pahalchuk.
Oh, yes.
That's our niece.
I've heard that name, absolutely.
Yes.
What's it like to have met a lot of members of your family with you for this?
To have family is extra special. Yeah, you know, my husband and I were coming at first, and then our son said, no, we're going to come too. And so we're the four of us. And so we're really enjoying our time here and just feel blessed to have been part of this.
Yes, Remembrance Day important to, once again, the sacrifices so many people made to keep this country great. Good to reflect on that. Well, that's all from me today. Like I said, Jamie will be in Vancouver. He's going to be covering the Grey Cup for us, getting us audio as it's once again the Bombers against the Argos. You're going to hear some more from me tomorrow as myself and Locker, we kind of hold down the fort here while Jamie is away. Of course, you'll hear Jamie throughout the week, but it's Grey Cup week. But more importantly, if you're in Regina and Saskatchewan, it's also Mitchell Bowl week as the U of R Rams host Laval in the Mitchell Bowl with the winner of that going to the Vanier Cup. So a great weekend of football still ahead. My name's Britton Gray here on for the Green Zone on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.